Well, good morning and welcome to this first hour of Focus 580. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus, we will take up the issue of homelessness. And the question that we ask is, why is it that it seems the problem of homelessness has been so resistant to our attempts to deal with it? Our guests this morning are Alice Baum and Donald Burns, and they have written a book in which they look at the issue of homelessness. The book is entitled A Nation in Denial, The Truth About Homelessness, in which they make the argument that contrary to what many people believe, that being that homelessness is a problem that is largely a result of poverty, of the lack of affordable housing, of the fact that for many people there are not jobs that will pay them a living wage, that in fact that we have not clearly enough seen what the real root of the problem is. And they say that for many of the homeless, the problem is alcohol dependency, drug addiction, mental illness, or some combination of all three. And it's their position that the programs that have been designed to try to help the homeless have not addressed these problems at all. And until we do address them, we're not going to be able to deal with the issue of homelessness. That is the essence of their argument. The book, by the way, is published by Westview Press and is out now in bookstores if you would like to take a look at it. Also, I do want to mention that our guests are going to be giving a talk on the U of I campus tonight as part of the MillerCom series on this topic. They'll be speaking in the Follinger Auditorium on the south end of the quad at 8 o'clock tonight. It is sponsored by many campus organizations, and as is the case with all MillerCom events, it's free and open to the public, and anybody who would like to attend should feel welcome to do that. Let me just tell you a little bit more about our guests. Alice Baum, during the 1970s, held a number of policy positions here in Champaign-Urbana. She served on the county's War on Poverty Council, the Urbana Human Relations Commission, and also the Urbana School Board. She then worked executive director of the National Advisory Council for the Education of Disadvantaged Children. As a substance abuse counselor at the Samaritan Ministry of Greater Washington, a church-based direct services organization serving the inner-city poor, she had direct, personal, and ongoing contact with many homeless people. Our other guest, Dr. Donald Burns, worked for 7 years at the U.S. National Institute of Education in the Department of Education, more recently as the Assistant Director for Elementary and Secondary Education at the Education Commission of the States, and in 1986, he became the Executive Director of the Samaritan Ministry of Greater Washington, where he was responsible for designing programs to address the needs of the homeless and for developing collaborative strategies with other organizations. We welcome them to the program, and one more thing I will say is that calls and questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much, David.
For being here. To start out, let me ask for you to talk about what is your assessment, and not just your assessment, but that of other researchers, about the makeup of the homeless. You make the set forth the argument and quote research that shows that about 40% of homeless adults have significant alcohol problems. Up to 20% are addicted to drugs. At least a third suffer severe and persistent chronic psychiatric disorders. From where does these numbers come?
One of the things we like to make clear is that ours is not a new study. It really is a review of existing studies that have been conducted across the country over the last 15 years. Many local studies, some state studies, a number of national studies. And there are now over 100 studies of various kinds that have looked at various homeless populations and the kinds of issues, the kinds of problems that the homeless suffer from. And on the basis of all of these studies, there is now drug addiction are based on self-reporting. We feel those numbers tend to be low. And then about a third suffer from severe psychosis. We can't simply add up the numbers because, as you indicated, some suffer from a combination of these problems. So we estimate that somewhere between two-thirds and 85% of all homeless adults suffer from one or more of these problems. Mm-hmm.
It's important to make clear the reason that we look at this data, which was readily available to us when we searched, particularly in the alcohol and drug treatment literature and the psychiatric literature. This information was available. It's important we present it not as some suggest because we are interested in blaming the victim. Certainly we are interested in doing the opposite of stigmatizing those people who suffer from these problems. The reason we believe that it's very important to talk about them, these are all treatable conditions. And in fact, the middle class, people on this campus, people we know, have increasingly ready access using employee assistance programs in some places, medical insurance and others, to obtain treatment, particularly for substance abuse, not so much for mental illness, which continues to be a problem. But people, there is treatment available for people in the middle class. What has happened is that since the 1980s, the baby boom population, a huge wave of young people, started turning of age for the onset of the debilitating effects of alcoholism, drug addiction, and for the onset of serious mental illness. During the period leading up to their coming on, this baby boom generation coming of age for the problems with this, we were systematically closing down treatment facilities. In the case of substance abuse, we were gentrifying treatment facilities. So that it's important to know these numbers, to know the statistics. It is important to understand that we are talking about, when we talk about homeless people, we're really talking about people who either live on the streets in other places that are not intended for human habitation, under bridges, on park benches, bus stations, etc., or who use homeless shelters. And the data that Don discussed with you is the data, the research data that's available. And it's important to know this. If we are to create policies to provide treatment for these very treatable conditions from which people can recover.
What sort of role, if any, do you see for the other kinds of factors that are more frequently cited, that is, those things that I mentioned, poverty, lack of affordable housing, the fact that the economy in the last 10, 15 years has been winding down, and a lot of people have found themselves unemployed or underemployed or so forth. I mean, what sort of role do those things play?
Obviously, they play some role. And one of the things that we like to state at the very outset is that we are terribly concerned about persistent poverty in this country. It's getting worse, and it is our strong feeling that the American national commitment to deal with the issue, for various reasons, seems to be declining, and that's of real concern to us. However, to talk about poverty, to talk about the fraying of the social safety net and so on, suggests that the solutions are the more traditional solutions that were developed in the 1960s as part of the war on poverty. Employment training, job development, affordable housing. Increases in the minimum wage, these kinds, increasing social security benefits and the like. And it is our direct experience that if those are the only solutions, we really aren't providing the kind of care and kind of treatment that most of the homeless need. So our focus really is to try and move the dialogue and debate beyond that, so that we can really begin to try and address some of the underlying problems.
One of our concerns is during for about the last 15 years, starting in the early 80s and continuing today, the debate about homelessness has focused on, in an attempt not to blame the victim or look at personal attributes, what are referred to as personal attributes, the debate has focused on those economic kinds of issues, and as Don suggests, the solutions that we've attempted, which have clearly failed since homelessness still exists, and we have done very little to help people who are homeless, we would like to separate the debate. We would like to talk about homelessness on the one hand, or we actually recommend in our book that we stop using the word homeless because it clouds the issue. We would like to talk about the serious need for treatment for substance abusers, the treatment that was promised in the 1970s by the Hughes Act that decriminalized alcoholism, but treatment that never was in fact provided. We like to talk for the homeless, for the mentally ill, about crisis care and, if not constant hospitalization, but short-term hospital stays when needed for the mentally ill, community mental health centers that were promised by Congress in the early 60s when they proceeded to embark on deinstitutionalization of mental illness. If we can talk about those issues in connection with homelessness, we might be able to address some policy failures that exist in those areas. We need to have an accurate, a cogent debate on issues of persistent poverty, and we're pleased that in tonight's State of the Union address, the President is going to talk about welfare reform, we understand, and reform of the healthcare system. We would like for there to be a national dialogue about the need for not only employment training, but creation of entry-level jobs and creation of low-skilled jobs with a job ladder built in. In fact, our next book is going to look at the issue of poverty. Since we've said in this book that we don't believe that homelessness is directly connected to poverty, and we feel now obligated to answer the question, if homelessness is not poverty, what is poverty in today's America? And that's the subject of our next book.
Our guests this morning, Alice Baum and Donald Burns, their book is entitled A Nation in Denial, The Truth About Homelessness, and the publisher is Westview Press, if you would like to look at it. Also, they will be giving a talk tonight in the MillerCom series at 8 o'clock in the Follinger Auditorium on the U of I campus. And, of course, anybody who would like to attend is welcome to do that. We are open to your questions and comments as well. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers to call. We do have a caller here on line one, so let's talk with him. Hello.
Hello. I'm just wondering, is there any way of determining which is the cause and effect, whether the homelessness causes the use, leads to increased use of drugs and alcohol and produces psychological problems, or whether it's the other way about?
It's a good question, and this is a question that is increasingly being raised as the national debate is beginning to talk about substance abuse and mental illness, which comes first. Interestingly, very little of the research has directly addressed this problem. There have only been two or three studies that have looked specifically at which is the predecessor condition, which is the successor condition. The studies that have looked at it have found that in the vast majority of cases, the substance abuse and or the mental illness precedes becoming homeless. However, I think both Alice and I would argue strongly that in one sense, it doesn't matter. If the issue is trying to help that individual recover, it doesn't matter whether the substance abuse and mental illness comes first or as a result of homelessness. You've got to deal with the substance abuse or mental illness first in order to help that individual onto a path of recovery.
That we hope a path of recovery that would lead to independent living and the ability to hold a job. When Don says that a few studies have looked at causality, the academic and scientific studies coming from the psychiatric literature and the substance abuse treatment literature, in fact, acknowledge that homelessness is a part of the downward spiral of untreated or unchecked alcoholism, drug addiction, and mental illness, so that the there is in the professional psychiatric and substance abuse treatment literature a much more ready acknowledgement that these conditions do come first and lead people on a downward spiral to that ends on not only on the streets and in shelters, but the characteristic of homelessness that has been universal since colonial days in America is social isolation. The thing that distinguishes the homeless from the domiciled alcoholic or the domiciled drug addict or mentally ill person is a fraying of that person's social connectedness to the normal helping systems of family, friends, church, community that even the poorest Americans have always relied on in times of economic crisis or other kinds of crisis. And when people suffer from untreated substance abuse or untreated mental illness for various reasons that, in fact, we'll address more fully in tonight's lecture, there is a disintegration of the social connectedness, and people end up being becoming homeless.
Those connections today are perhaps increasingly becoming attenuated.
I think in those connections are becoming attenuated among, and now you're asking a very interesting question, those connections are even becoming more attenuated among the persistently poor, people who are still domiciled but are, in fact, not yet homeless or not homeless and may never become homeless. But there is a breakdown in connectedness throughout our society. You're absolutely correct.
Might one almost cause this, Mary's data, might one almost call this situation a syndrome rather than it's an interconnection of a great many factors, and that the cause may simply lead to other factors being aggravated?
Well, again, when you're talking about a society-wide disconnectedness, social communication breakdowns, etc. A wonderful book that I urge you, if you've probably, from what you're saying, you may in fact have read, Habits of the Heart, which came, a book that was published in the mid-1980s, is a fine book that describes the changing American connectedness between societies and between citizens in our society. Not particularly political, really a philosophical assessment of what's been going on in sort of the American life. As for the people who we see on streets and or in shelters, it really is, in the vast, vast majority of the cases, chronic, treatable, but chronic alcoholism and drug addiction and the serious deleterious effects of that and mental illness. And those are known and have been known in the scientific community, in the medical community, really for some 20 years. And in fact, that's why the reforms of deinstitutionalization and decriminalization, those are physiological phenomena with physiological predispositions on the part of some to have suffer from these conditions, which can be treated. I'm not sure that I think that the kind of social disconnectedness that perhaps you're talking with exacerbates the suffering of people who are otherwise nevertheless socially isolated because of serious afflictions.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
I
know that that your book has touched off some controversy, and that other people who work with the homeless have disagreed with some of your conclusions. And I'm thinking in particular about someone who wrote in a letter to a journal that or a magazine that had carried an article that was based on the
right.
book Nation in Denial. That it was someone who also worked in another homeless shelter in Washington D.C. who made the point that when she looks at the people who come into her shelter, they don't match up with the kind of statistics for incidents of substance abuse and alcohol and mental illness that you mentioned, that in fact a lot of those people work, but they do face the problem that they just don't make enough to afford housing in Washington, D.C. And this person suggested that perhaps your assessment of the situation had something to do with the fact that though the kind of people that you have encountered in your own work do in fact conform to those statistics, that profile. And she would say the kind of people that she sees in the shelter where she works are really very different. And I wonder how you respond to that kind of criticism.
Let's be very specific. We were invited by the Journal of the Public Welfare Association to write a fairly long article which essentially summarizes some of the main points in our book. And we did that. Our article was published in the spring issue of the Journal of Public Welfare in 1993. Because of some interest on the part of some of the readers, the editors asked whether we would be willing to participate in a dialogue with some people who might in fact represent a position different from ours, and particularly people that whose work we address in our book. The individual you're talking about, David, was Carol Fenling, the now former member of the Community for Creative Nonviolence, the person who assumed leadership of the CCNB shelter and the Homelessness Project in Washington that was originally created by Mitch Snyder, who I know that many of your listeners know. Two things. We responded, incidentally, to at the invitation of the editors of Public Welfare. This was really to be a dialogue, and we responded to Carol Fenley's letter, which appeared later in the winter issue. What we said to Ms. Fenley specifically was that we wrote this book to, in fact, engage in a dialogue, and rather than focusing on what she claimed were disagreements, she also acknowledged in her letter to Public Welfare, CCNV had started an alcohol and drug treatment program, and a small part of the shelter is, in fact, does house people who are in recovery. They contract out to a service provider to run a small alcohol and drug treatment program. And she bragged about a 78% recovery rate for her treatment program. Well, we, in our response to her, of course, congratulated her for not only having such a fine program, but reporting such high recovery rates, which are similar to the two-year recovery rates that are being reported out of Portland, Oregon, which is our major model program, which really does offer wide scale, not just a part of their program, but it's their whole program in Portland is a recovery model program. To some extent, the problem with what you've just reported as Carol Fenley's response in that article in Public Welfare is that she just didn't tell the truth, which was uncovered by Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes, I think in the 60 Minutes program that aired on December 12th or 13th of this past year. CCNV, 60 Minutes went in with cameras and showed what we knew was true. Drug deals take place inside the shelter of CCNV. Alcohol, bottles of vodka were being shown on tape as being openly distributed. Other violations also, in fact, some serious violations of law. The reselling of food, which if it includes federal commodities, surplus food is really a felony to sell federal surplus food. And Carol Fenley finally admitted that all of these things, in fact, were going on at CCNV shelter and has recently been ousted by the board and has resigned from the community. The CCNV shelter got a lot of national publicity. Mitch Snyder himself was an enormously charismatic leader who is given credit by many for bringing homelessness to the American attention. Our real quarrel with Mitch Snyder and then again with Carol Fenley is that by failing to acknowledge the alcohol and drug addiction that exists even in their shelter and which is permitted, alcohol and drug use was widely permitted, they really enable people to continue to engage in activities that are life-threatening. And a lot of people have died at the CCNV shelter.
The other thing I'd add to that, David, is with the exception of Carol Fenley, all of the reaction that we have gotten from people who are specifically engaged in working with the homeless in shelters, in transitional housing programs, et cetera, everybody has said, you know, you're right. The numbers are not surprising. They really are comparable to our own experience. Thank you very much for laying all of this out because it really is going to allow us to begin to focus more directly on the problems. Folks who actually work in the field with homeless people all know this to be true. So that the criticisms of our book, by and large, do not come from people who are engaged in the business of providing services to homeless people.
We are at our midpoint here. I need to spend just a moment talking about upcoming programs, and then we will talk some more. We have several callers here who are standing by. On our second hour today, our guest is Henry Howe. We hope that you will be with us for some shows. One thing we do want to mention real quick, that this is one of the points during the year when we ask people to support this station with your contributions, and particularly right at the moment, we're looking for people who have never supported us before. The financial contributions of our listeners make a big difference in the quality of the service that we can provide. We can do that because people support us with their financial contributions. If you're not a friend of WILL, you can make a big difference by giving us a call right now during our new member enrollment period with a membership pledge of $40 or more. And for the first person who's calling this morning in this hour as a way of saying thanks, we'll send you a coffee mug. So you can give us a call, 217-333-0850. It seems a little awkward in the middle of a program like this to be asking for contributions, but the fact of the matter is that they're very important to continuing this station's operations. So if you like what you hear on this show and other shows and you have never supported us, we would appreciate it very much if you could do that. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Franklin Travel. This September, travelers on the WILL Masterpiece and More Tour will experience Wales and southern England, including visits to Dartmoor, Plymouth, and Bath. Information is available at WILL. Our guests this morning, Alice Baum and Donald Burns, are author of a book entitled A Nation in Denial, which they subtitle The Truth About Homelessness. It is published by Westview Press and is now available in bookstores if you'd like to read it. Also, they will be giving a talk on this topic as part of the MillerCom series on the U of I campus tonight at 8 in the Folinger Auditorium. It is open to anybody who would like to attend. There is no charge, as is the case with all MillerCom events. We do have several people here lined up who would like to be a part of the conversation. We'll bring him right in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll free, anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-WILL. Here is our next caller. This is on line number two. Hello.
Hello. I was hearing your comments. I tuned in when you were talking about kids not being adequately disciplined and ending up in the criminal justice system. And
wrong program.
Pardon?
We weren't talking about children in the criminal justice system.
Well, people who had not been adequately disciplined as children.
We've not been talking about that. We're talking about homelessness.
I know, but you were talking. Was it a caller who talked about that?
No.
Well, I didn't invent it, but I will hang up then. I know you're talking about homelessness. Oh, but I have another.
Well, if you have a point to make, go ahead. Sure.
Well, I thought I heard one of you, and I do not. Well, it was not. It was a male voice. Saying that people ended up in the criminal justice system in part because they had no sense of self-discipline and had not been raised with that. I had an interesting opportunity to watch two families. Both they happened to be at the same time. I'm a landlord, and one was a family of a tenant, and one was someone in the neighborhood. And I watched them over the course of a year or two. And I saw in both of those families totally different parenting styles from mine, and that was part of why I was intrigued by them, but they also because they were causing me problems and the neighborhood problems. And it wasn't because the kids weren't being disciplined. They were being inappropriately disciplined. And in fact, one kid I'm sure is going to end up homeless. I'm sure she's going to run away. And in fact, for her own survival, she may need to run away. I have no idea where this child is, but she was being disciplined so severely that I reported the family to DCFS. Things like not letting the children, just making the children stand up all night if they took any food from the kitchen.
Okay, you're talking about. Neither I nor Don talked about disciplining children and entry into the criminal justice system. However, you are addressing an issue which, as you heard during David's introduction of us, we both worked in the field of education for disadvantaged children. And that also has nothing to do with discipline in the criminal justice system, but we are very interested in children and issues that concern children. There is a You are directing attention to a serious problem, which is brutalization of children and child abuse. And, in fact, sort of bringing that issue into our purview of the issue of homelessness, one of the whatever happens to the children across this, in your neighborhood remains to be seen. However, children who do suffer physical abuse and once there is family violence within in a domestic situation, and that is found, that's a very high incidence of homeless children who live in homeless shelters. Homeless families are characterized by mothers who were brutalized as children, sexually assaulted, connected, in fact, to alcohol and drug abuse in their families. Many homeless mothers, in fact, brutalize it's not discipline, it's just they abuse their children. In one study in California, some 40% of all homeless mothers reported that they had been abused as children, and they acknowledged that their children had witnessed them being abused by other people, the men in their lives, and they also abused their children. So, the single most certain predictor of homelessness, although not an absolute predictor, is time spent in foster care. So the fact that when in abusive family situations, if children are taken out of the home into foster care, it establishes a long, if interventions aren't done to correct the situation, it establishes residential instability in a child's young life, which at a study at the University of Wisconsin was found as a very high predictor of the case of homelessness.
Well, I wonder why there is opposition to spending more money to help families learn how to parent and learn and providing help for so that parents can overcome those obstacles. And I, for one, am somebody who strongly supports, I pay more taxes to help, because it seems like we end up paying a whole lot more down the criminal justice system and in all kinds of areas.
Right. One of the, our concern is that much of the dialogue about homelessness, people who suffer from debilitating conditions, has focused on a housing need. As we describe in our book, one of the sort of evolutions of policy discussions about homelessness is people became so frustrated with their inability to help people on the streets, the attention began to focus on what was called homeless prevention programs, giving help to people living now in public housing. And we say those programs are fine, but they don't deal with people who are homeless. Many of those programs that are now quite I don't know that they're very well funded, but there are a number of them throughout the country. Homelessness prevention programs in public housing do focus on such things as parenting skills and do address the kinds of things that you're talking about. And I appreciate that you're calling to the listener's attention a need to look at the issue of child abuse and a need to focus resources on parenting skills and appropriate parenting, not only or just appropriate child rearing strategies, I think, not only in the homes but also in the schools. And again, as the previous caller who was talking about an attenuation of sort of community, sense of community throughout American society, I think that perhaps your comments lead into that also. We need to be more connected and try and treat our children better.
The one thing I would add is the research on what happens to kids who are in these kinds of situations, the kinds of developmental delays, much higher incidence of various kinds of physical and psychological debilitating illnesses. And the long-term implications of all of that for our national public education system and having to deal with kids who enter the system severely troubled with all kinds of learning disabilities. And it's going to create some real problems for us down the line.
We have a number of other callers holding, and I hope the last caller will forgive me if I go on and we talk with somebody else. This will be line number one. Hello.
Could you tell us about this model program in Portland that you've mentioned a couple of times?
We would be delighted to tell you about it. Thank you for asking about it. We were just waiting for the appropriate opportunity. In the mid-1980s, the city of Portland and the county that surrounds it, Multnomah County, public officials, governmental officials, the business community, the religious community, the not-for-profit service provider community, all got together under the leadership of the mayor to develop a citywide plan to address the problem of homelessness. What's remarkable about the plan is that it includes, unlike any other planning document of its kind we've ever seen, a statement of values. And what the value statements were able to do was to create a starting point for everybody to come to a real consensus about. There was full and complete acknowledgement in the planning document about the problems of alcoholism, drug addiction, and mental illness. And what the Portland plan and the developers of the plan have done is to create a full continuum of services, starting with aggressive outreach through outreach vans that patrol the city. They passed a local ordinance called a persons down ordinance. It's a sheriff's term, which means persons incapacitated on the street. There are deputized workers on the van who go out and are authorized to pick people up and take them either to a substance abuse crisis detox facility, if that's the problem, or to a crisis psychiatric facility if mental illness of one kind or another is the presenting problem. And then once people enter into those crisis facilities, they are strongly encouraged into either substance abuse treatment or into mental health treatment. The most remarkable thing about all of this is that following the treatment programs, the city, with the help of some private corporations and private developers, have developed over 1,000 units of single-room occupancy hotel housing that are all based on the recovery model, so that recovering substance abusers are now living in these recovery model facilities. Stabilized mentally ill, formerly homeless people are living in structured and monitored facilities that provide support for people who need that kind of support to take their medication. And the kinds of statistics that are now coming out of Portland are absolutely phenomenal. We were talking to the clinical director of one of the programs just the other day, after having visited Portland in October of this past fall. And he is saying that among the formerly homeless people who were suffering from substance abuse problems, 2 years later, they now have a 75% continued recovery rate, which is, even in the middle class, absolutely phenomenal. About 50% of the people who started in their programs are now completely in recovery, are employed, have left the full continuum of services in the program, and are now living independently. So that we have seen in the Portland situation, given the willingness to recognize the vast majority of the people suffer from these problems, a true program, community-wide program, that has really accomplished a phenomenal amount of care and good for homeless people within the course of 4 or 5 years.
One of the things that Richard Harris, who is, as Don said, the clinical director of the organization called Central City Concerns in Portland, he used a phrase the other day in this conversation, which I'd like to repeat. He was very enthusiastic. There's just enormous excitement about what's going on in Portland, and third and fourth generation levels of sophistication about how to help people who had been so debilitated they had been on the streets. Anyhow, what he said was, there is an enormous synergistic energy created by the combination of recovery plus hope. When people are in recovery, when you give them a sense of hope that their futures can be better, then energy is created that really infuses, that turns on itself and infuses the system with a dynamic that's incredible. One of the SROs, it's a sober house. The rules are very clear. People have to maintain their recovery, their sobriety. If they have a relapse, they have to leave the program, although they're always welcome back as soon as they get become clean and sober again. One of the programs that we visited this past October is now, it's referred to as a personal economic development model. People are long enough in their recovery so that they're now in, they're focusing on their future employment. If they need to get their GEDs, that's what they're doing. If they need skill training or job training, they're doing that. They're going out for interviews. They have workshops that help them prepare for interviews and write resumes and that kind of thing. Once they are employed, these are people who have not worked for quite a number of years, and there are job support groups within, it's called the Estate
The Shoreline
Hotel. One of the great things about the Portland model is that as word leaks out about these various different the entities, the separate components in the Portland model, they are being adopted by other cities. And in Baltimore, there's a personal economic development model and a sober shelter program for men who they have a connection with some inpatient treatment programs where they direct men if they need long-term inpatient treatment to get over their substance abuse problems. But then when they come back to these, it's called the South Baltimore Station. When they come back to the station, they then are, it's exactly the same thing. Personal economic development, GED training, skill training, and employment. And Portland, now in Baltimore, people are graduating from the South Baltimore Station, which is a congregate living situation, into the kind of sober housing that is the jewel in the crown, as we call it, of the Portland model. In Baltimore, there's business money being infused into this not-for-profit corporation that's just rehabilitated two residences, two houses that will house sober housing for about 8 or 9 men with one house manager living in one of the two buildings. It's wonderful when you see people in recovery. And it's, as Richard Harris said, recovery plus hope really does create a great sense of energy and a dynamic that's fabulous.
We're headed now into about our just last 5 minutes and have a couple of other callers. I want to try to get one, possibly two more people in the time we have left. So let's go on again, and this is line number 3.
Huh?
Hello.
How you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Speaking of this, you're talking about homeless. And you know what make homeless people? They're well off the base. Homeless people start from taxes. You take real estate taxes. When people cannot pay up, they're homeless. You know, when they talk about the people in the public housing, well, those people have been robbed. The government leaders, they don't see people when they get elected. I know a lot of people myself out here. They lose their homes because of a few dollars taxes here. Because they lose their jobs. They can't pay their real estate taxes. Then they come in, they snatch their homes from them. That's what throws people into the street. You know, years ago, used to be times, most of them could go live with their grandparents, their grandfathers and things. And they had little farms. They could feed them. And, you know, they could work on a farm there. Feed chickens and...
Right. You're now talking about what we said earlier, that poor people, even desperately poor people in times of crisis, have in the past and still do today rely on family members. Go live with grandfather on the farm, work on the farm. Family will, in former times and still today, will take people in and give them the break.
That's right.
What we're talking about, and your issue about taxes, I think you need to talk to your local government officials about that and possibly your representatives in Congress.
You can't talk to them because they don't listen to them.
Well, just keep trying.
So many times, and I see people around me, all the people that have lost their homes, even when they couldn't take them, the kids grow up, they can't even take them because nobody would issue them money. Even the banks, the mortgage companies, they don't even, when they're down like that, they got a limit where you can only get so much and they keep you at that barrel level. So that means that There's no help. Nobody's trying to help.
Well, with your kind of energy and our willingness to be here and the kind of reception we're receiving in Champaign-Urbana, people are talking about those things, and it's great to hear you worry about them. We need to keep talking about them.
And I need to move on. I hope, again, the caller will forgive me. I want to try to get at least one more caller here. We'll go to our toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to go a little bit longer, but it grieves me that we have all these homeless people. I'm happy to hear that there's solutions coming, but it grieves me even more that a disproportionate number of these homeless are veterans, and I'm wondering if you've could address that. And I'm not wanting the government necessarily to spend money on them, but what's the solution? These men and women went to Korea and Vietnam, and they served their country, and now they're out on the streets. And I'm a World War II veteran, but it just saddens me and makes me want to cry when I think about these people.
We certainly appreciate your concern, and we share it. All of the research suggests that about a third of single homeless men are veterans. Many of them are veterans of Vietnam. And one of the real tragedies is that particularly as Vietnam veterans were coming back to this country after service in Vietnam, the Veterans Administration was systematically cutting back on care. Inpatient hospital beds for mental illness, and we have to keep in mind the kinds of traumatic situations that many of the Vietnam vets suffered when they were in the service. So that we are quite critical of the Veterans Administration, at least in past years, for not providing the kind of help that the veterans really needed.
As someone who did alcohol and drug counseling on the streets in with homeless people in Washington, D.C., I did an internship at D.C. General Hospital, also in Washington, D.C., one of the first questions people ask is, alcohol and drug counselors, is, are you a veteran? And the reason we ask that, and this is quite discriminatory against women, is that the VA still does, it's inadequate, there's not enough of it, but the VA still does provide inpatient treatment for substance abuse. And it's one of the few resources that people now, because there is not insufficient treatment for homeless substance abusers, the VA is one of the few sources that people who are working with homeless people have available to them. And so to some extent, the VA did, as part of deinstitutionalization, as Don said, by 1980, I think they'd cut back on psychiatric beds by over 59% just at the time the Vietnam vets were coming back. They do not have, they're cutting back on the number of beds they have for substance abuse treatment, but the fact that we all ask people who work with the homeless, are you a veteran, so we can get folks into the VA, doesn't solve the problem for women. You're absolutely correct about the situation of veterans on the streets. It's abhorrent. It's terrible. We need to do something about it. And we say so in our book.
We are going to have to leave it at that because we're just at the end of our time. And I want to thank you both very much, Alice Baum, Donald Burns, for being here.
Thank you, David.
For people who would like to read more on this subject, you can look at their book. It's entitled A Nation in Denial, The Truth About Homelessness. It's published by the Westview Press. And for people who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana, you can hear them talk tonight. This is a MillerCom event talking on this topic at 8 o'clock in the Folinger Auditorium on the U of I campus, and anybody who is welcome to attend.